Coming to you live.
We're live.
From the basement of an abandoned training facility. Where we talk about fighting, training, and events. It's the Fight Mixer Show. Where you can hear about all the local and world combat sports happenings. Get ready. It's time to gear up and square up. Because we're going live.
Live.
And now.
Broadcasting live.
We will broadcast
live.
On the Fight Mixer Show.
Perfect.
Check, check, check. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Fight Mixer. I feel a lot of pressure because, one, I have my guest host of the night, 11-year veteran, former tough veteran, a lot better than me in all categories of MMA, and more knowledgeable, too. Mr. Gabe, how you doing tonight?
What's going on? Thanks for having me on. Tough is the low point of my career, though. I 3-time WC champion, I'll take that. I'll be all right with that.
There you go.
But yeah, tough is that's my least favorite memory. And if I go in my history of my fighting, that's the one I prefer not to talk about.
Fair enough. And yeah. we're also joined by our current guest, the reigning, defending new champion, Titan FC bantamweight champion of the world, Mr. Danny Sabatello. Welcome.
Oh, sweet. What's up, guys?
What's going on?
Much better.
And how's it feel to come off your win? Impressive performance, winning by rear naked choke. Incredible performance. How do you feel?
Yeah, it feels great. Because I got that first round finish, I knew I wanted to get a first round finish. I didn't really exactly know how it was going to come, whether it be a knockout, TKO, or choke. But I'm just glad I got the first round finish and it was quick. So honestly, I'm satisfied with my performance and it was awesome.
Yeah, man. And, you know, it was just a dominant performance. I was impressed by it. I mean, it's back to original form. And what I appreciate most about you is, you know, coming off a loss, it's either make or break in the career. Either you're going to lose confidence, you stumble, and then the slippery slope happens. But you're able to rebound after your loss to Irving, come back swinging, come back with a big victory. Like, what was it like to get mentally into the zone, get ready for that fight, and get ready for that title fight, and put on your one of your best performances I've seen?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you're going through something where you just lost, it's kind of like you were dragged through the mud. So it almost makes you a little bit meaner, a little bit hungrier. So after that loss, I mean, I wouldn't say I did like a ton of reflecting, but I kind of looked at myself and said, you know what, this next performance that I do is going to have to be a big one. And that's why I wanted that first round finish, just to kind of, you know, cement my name back in the mix and that, you know, just to show that I'm for real. So I did. I got that first round finish and it was awesome.
Awesome, man. So you also train with ATT. Gabe obviously is familiar with ATT. And how did they help with getting ready for this training camp and getting ready for this fight?
Well, it's just the best camp that there is. You know, the best coaches and the best training partners, not only just, you know, what they've accomplished, but honestly, I get to go with just different guys that are my weight class. You know, I'm in bantamweight, and we got a bunch of killers at the gym, bantamweight. So they help whatever I need, really. And we were going through a pandemic with Corona and everything, and they gave me everything that I ever wanted. You know, people were asking me, was I able to get into good training during this camp? And I absolutely was. Not really much changed for me. I was able to go twice a day, every day for this camp. And I really prepared the right way, thanks to American Top Team, you know, because they have their sights on what a fighter should have. And they were great to me.
Right. And I think what were you saying, Gabe? I'm so sorry.
I said good stuff. I'm a bystander at this point. Don't mind me.
So my biggest question is, because ATT has some of the best talent in the world, just like yourself. Like, so what they do, like, as precautions to make sure you stayed healthy, coaches stayed healthy, your teammates stayed healthy, like, what precautions they do during the training camp?
Well, it's only pros right now that are welcome in the gym. You know, American Top Team, really, if you're anybody, if you're trying to do jiu-jitsu or Muay Thai or kickboxing, normally you're allowed in the gym to take classes. But right now, it's only for pros, not just every pro. It's kind of like you got to be one of the better guys and one of the guys that they see works hard every day. So it's not letting just anybody come through the gym and sweat on our mats, but it's just guys that have fights coming up and guys that are in big promotions really and guys that are getting after it. So I'm not training with guys that are just coming off the street and we don't know where they've been. It's guys that I trust and I know that won't get me sick.
Right. And so going, you know, you wrestled for Purdue, obviously a dominant wrestling program. When did you realize that this was the career you want to follow by? Because obviously you're a scary fucking wrestler and you wrestle for a great program. Like, when did you realize that you were much more than a wrestler than you went into combat sports?
Yeah, always. I always knew I was going to be a fighter once my wrestling career was done. I like to think that I'm a good wrestler because I'm a good fighter. But it's funny because when I was growing up, I was watching guys like Mike Brown and Pitbull. And now they basically train me. You know, Mike Brown is like one of my biggest coaches and he's always in my corner and he's always talking to me every day. But yeah, I mean, at a young age, I always knew I wanted to fight, watching WEC and all that, getting jacked up. And I think now more and more wrestlers are following in those footsteps. So once your wrestling career is done, you go and fight just because wrestling is just such a big part of MMA. So it helps so much. And if you have that dog mentality where you're willing to go out there and fight all the time, then it's just perfect for you.
Yeah. And I my first memories, because I grew up in a wrestling household as well. Like, I remember Kevin Jackson going into the sport, the UFC. I'm like, what the fuck is the UFC? Like, but like, what was your first like exposure to mixed martial arts? It, like, what really like triggered, like, hey, this is the career I can go down. Like, what was the first exposure to MMA?
I'd say, really, so Clay Guida, he's from Chicago, and my wrestling club, Izzy Style, we would go at it all the time, and Clay came in one time, and I really looked up to Clay, and just kind of like to just see him there in person and, you know, kind of go with him and roll around with him. It kind of made it more like surreal to me, where it's like, okay, you know what, I could do this when I'm done wrestling and go down the path that he has, because if I'm going to be successful in wrestling, then I think I could be successful in fighting. So, and when you got
a better of them
looking up to like Clay Guida, you know, in the room and you get to roll around with him, I think it's nothing good but exposure.
Did you get the better of him? Admit it. Admit you got the better of him.
Well, at that time, and when you're going against a wrestler that just does it all the time, it's different, you know, going against.
Oh, absolutely.
So what I notice about your fights, Danny, and what I love the most is like, and this is like a reoccurring theme, like you're such a scary fucking wrestler that people try to fight you on the outside, not knowing that you're also a creative, versatile striker, and right, you're going to strike from all angles. So like, if you fight you on the out in the inside, you're fucked because the takedown's there. Fight you on the outside, you're fucked because your takedown, your striking is so creative and it comes from all angles, and you know, you feel so comfortable and confident there. Like, how, like, did you make the transformation from wrestler to a complete mixed martial artist? Like getting comfortable on your back, like, and jiu-jitsu, and like, what was the transition like from wrestling to MMA?
Yeah, the transition was easy because I think when you express interest in something, then you're going to get, and I have a massive interest in striking. And I actually get in trouble sometimes with my coaches because during my sparring sessions, I'll like keep it standing and work on my kickboxing when they're like, yo, do your bread and butter, you know, take them down, ground and pound them, do all that stuff. But I really like striking, honestly. And if there was one thing to critique from my last fight, I kind of wanted keep it standing a little bit longer, but I saw he was like standing straight up in his stance. So if you're going to give me a takedown, then I'm going to take it. But I do think that with my wrestling credentials, people are going to think that I'm just going to go out there and try to wrestle you. And that will open up my striking. You know, if I fake a takedown or have my eyes low on their legs, as if I'm about to take them down, I think it's going to even bring striking to the next level, because that threat of their legs is going to be there. So they'll drop their hands, and then I could come back over the top with a two or a hook.
Yeah. And how did you get involved with Titan FC? Titan FC is one of my favorite promotions. And by the way, they're on UFC Fight Pass. If you guys haven't heard of them, check it out. Great promotion. So how did you get involved with them?
Yeah, well, they're out of South Florida, and American Top Team, you know, is down there in South Florida. So I think it was just like word of mouth and everything. And Lex McMahon, dude, he runs a great fucking show. If I'm not in the UFC, I want to fight for Titan, because they do it right. You know, they treat their fighters good, and I love performing for them. They're a great organization. But yeah, it was just really the opportunity came up, and one day I was talking to Lex McMahon, and he asked me if I wanted to fight for one of those shows, and I was ecstatic. You know, Titan, it's people are watching those fights worldwide, so I had to take that opportunity, and now that's really all who I want to fight for, or not.
Yeah, and now you're on top of the promotion. I mean, you're now bantamweight champion, and you had a last dominant performance in your last title fight. I mean, so what do you see in the bantamweight division in Titan? Do you see any challengers or somebody that can actually challenge for the throne, or who do you have to rely on?
After my fight, I saw on social media a bunch of other bantamweights that were calling me out. But honestly, all those motherfuckers are boring. Until someone calls me out in an exciting fashion, or something like, you know, a killer that would make a good fight, then I'm open to it. I'll call them out right back. But honestly, these guys are just fucking boring inside the cage, boring outside the cage. So until someone sparks my interest, I'm not going to go out of my way to mention anybody's name.
When you say they're boring, are you saying that their style is boring, and that you like they're not a matchup for you, or are you just saying that they couldn't build a fight that would make it interesting for you?
Well, a little bit of both. Like one guy just said, like he tagged me on Instagram, I think it was, maybe Facebook, and he was like, "Danny Sabatello, fight me," or something like that. It's like, dude, like anybody can say that. Like call me out, like insult me, do something. And then also like inside the cage, if somebody's like flashy, you know, they talk shit during their fighting, or they just have an exciting fighting style, then I'm open. But honestly, these guys bore me. That's the bottom line.
Right. Speaking of talking shit, what was all the banter about after the fight?
Yeah, that was a little weird, and everyone about that. So no secret that I like to talk trash before the fight. You know, I like to build the fight. And honestly, for myself, I like to get emotionally invested. You know, I want to hate my opponent. I want to run him over with a bus before the fight. But once the fight's done, it's over to me. You know, I'll be the first one to buy you a shot of vodka after. Like, so once the fight was over, I'm clearly just done talking trash. I'm nothing but respect after the fight. And clearly, he didn't feel that same way. He was still mad. I think the trash talk got to him. And honestly, that's really what I look for when I'm
part
talking
of the game.
To you.
What was that?
I said it's part of the game.
It is. And a lot of people emotionally, they can't take it. You know, they get too, you know, wound up, or they get so mad. And that's what I'm looking for is the mental game. That's why I talk trash. Is because when guys go into that cage, they got so much built up aggression, and they're not, you know, on their game. So yeah, after he was still upset, and I was just going over to say, "Hey man, nice fight. Like, you're gonna be successful after this and all that." But he kind of pushed me away, and that kind of pissed me off, because it's like, listen, man, we're here as fighters, but we're also entertainers. You know, we're trying to grow this sport, so we're trying to build up the fight, and I was trying to build up the fight. And then afterwards, it's nothing but respect. But with him, he was still pissed. But it's no sweat.
So we have two generations out here. Danny, who is the next generation, and Gabe, who's a veteran of the sport and a legend himself in his own right.
I'm a legend. That's not Gabe, I appreciate that, but like that's not thrown around. There are legends. There's Fedor. There's Anderson Silva. There's even a Hoyce Gracie. Like, those are legends. Like, I mean, I fought, and I'm very, very fortunate I got that opportunity to do that, but I would never even put myself in that category. But, it's a trip listening, because I know that the way the fighting is now is that there's the element of entertainment. And for me, it was like, I don't need to talk shit. We're going in there, we're going to fight. We're going to go in there, we're going to do this thing. I don't care what you have to say. Like, I I'm not going to say anything negative about you, because I don't care. When everything is said and done, we're going to get into a cage. And in that moment, you're going to make it, you're either going to beat me or I'm going to beat you. And you know what? That's how it is. And if you beat me, I still want to fight you again, because I still think I can beat you. Like, you know, like genuinely, like, I it's a different world. I respect it. And it's interesting to see the transformation. There's definitely a transformation in MMA to where there's that entertainment aspect of it. And it's great. But I was just like, you want to talk all you want to talk, fine, we're fighting tomorrow. I feel like, You don't have anything to be upset about.
So. But isn't that so fucking weird how the sport has evolved? Like, and that's the question I want to ask. That's a question I want to ask you, Danny, because my biggest hero was Kazuchi Sakuraba, who back in 2002 sold out the Tokyo Olympic Stadium, 100,000 people for K1 Pride Dynamite. And Sakuraba was one of the most respectful guys on the fucking planet. I mean, Sakuraba was just talented in his own right, where he, you know, he was just entertainment, like entertainment personified. Cartwheels, lifting up Hoist Gracie by the pants and trying to derogate him and shit like that. Like, crazy. Like, and so I grew up with the Sakurabas of the world. But now the sport has evolved to the Conor McGregor's, where that's the way to make money, and that's the way to sell yourself and get into the big, big promotions and everything. Like, so, Danny, as a competitor, do you feel like this is the way to make money, and this is the way to make a name for yourself in like MMA, or is this just mental warfare for you? Is this just how you get in your opponent's head?
Well, I think it's a little bit of. No, honestly, even back in wrestling, I would talk a little bit of trash in terms of mental warfare, because I do think a lot of guys, they can't take it. You know, when you got someone telling something to your face, you know, they really panic. You know, they can't handle it. They get a little bit too emotionally invested. When you get a guy and a seasoned vet and you're going to talk trash, it doesn't really get to them. You know, at the end of the day, you're going to go in there and fight either way. But I do think it does a little something to these guys in terms of mental warfare. And if you're a beginner fighter, it's going to get to you. But also, I do think it sells tickets. And a lot of fans are casuals. They get invested in the emotion behind the fight. I think there's two parts to the fight. There's the build up to the fight and there's the actual fight. You know, and if you take, for example, a fight where two guys, they like each other, they respect each other, there's no banter, it's just going to be a good fight. I think fans will view that as not as exciting if there's two guys that have just been talking trash about each other and building up the fight. So I think I do think the trash talk before the fight is good. It's nothing you say is gonna affect anything inside the fight unless you let it mentally.
Right. So who will be the opponent, like maybe a rematch with like Irving Rivera? Like who is the guy you would want to fight that actually will sell those tickets, you know, get your name even further out there and get you to the next level, which is obviously not a lot of people can hang with your stuff. You bring a lot of meat to the table that not a lot of people can deal with. Your wrestling is superb. So like who is what's the fight? What's the next fight that gets you to the next level or sells tickets or whatever you want to accomplish?
Yeah, I really don't know right now because Irvin Rivera is in the UFC now. I would like to fight him and get that fight back. But since he's in the UFC, I mean, maybe that fight will happen someday, but I mean, I'm not going to seek it out or anything. These other guys and Titan and all that other under promotions are boring. They just bore me. So nobody really specifically I have on my mind until I'm in the UFC, and then I'll probably be calling out guys once I'm in the UFC. But just right now, I mean, anybody that's going to bring it, anybody that's going to bring a good fight, anybody that has a good skill set.
Right. And if you can't find any challengers, I mean, ATT has enough connections, and obviously Titan FC has a lot of connections. Like, if you can't find a fight that, you know, will get you to wake up in the morning, because obviously you need a good opponent, you need a good dance partner to get you motivated, get you woken up. And obviously, as a wrestler, you know that better than anybody. When you know that you're matched up in your bracket with somebody that is a killer or a buzzsaw, nothing motivates anybody more than that. Like, so you grew up with that mentality into MMA and transfer there. Like, if nothing motivates you, when you just want to make the step to the UFC or maybe Bellator, or like, is that the next logical closure point to?
Yeah, you know, definitely. Honestly, whatever fight presents itself next, I'm going to take. You know, if it's Titan and they're saying, hey, defend the belt, then I'll do that. If Lex McMahon calls me tonight and he's like, hey, listen, in a month we want you to defend the belt, we got an opponent and it's going to be an awesome fight, then I'll do that. At the same time, if the UFC calls and they said, hey, we got a short notice fight for you, then I'll take that as well. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a fighter, and I always like fighting. You know, last year in 2019, I had five fights, and it's the same thing that I want this year in 2020. Any fight that presents itself, honestly, I'm going to take, no matter what it is.
Right. And it could be in any promotion, right? Like UFC One, like Bellator, like there's more options than just like, you know, Gabe, where like the biggest promotions were UFC Pride and like, you know, there are different promotions out there, but nothing on that echelons. But like now there's options. I mean, there's UFC, Bellator One, all these promotions all across the world. Like, is your main goal winning UFC or whatever's going to pay the most money for your services?
Yeah, probably both. I mean, I think growing up and everything, the goal was always the UFC. But if, like you said, like One or Ryzen or Bellator gives a hefty paycheck, then I'll obviously take that. But right now, I kind of have my eyes on the UFC because that's the premier
800-pound gorilla.
What's up?
That's the 800-pound gorilla. Everybody wants the 800-pound gorilla.
Right, right. But that's what's shown here in America all the time. So I want my friends and family to be able to watch me fight. So, I mean, I do think the UFC is the top of my list, but I mean, I'm not totally opposed to going to these other big organizations. At the end of the day, I just want to fight and make money.
Right. And do you see any opponents? Obviously, you have plenty of people in your crosshairs, but like, do you see, if Titan doesn't amuse you or entertain you, do you see any opponents in the bantamweight division besides the champion, of course, because obviously as a competitor, you know, champion's going to be in your crosshairs at all times. But like, do you see anybody in the bantamweight division in the UFC that really, that's the fight you want? Like, thinking big week, like thinking like big strategy.
Yeah, and I hate to mention his name and call him out or anything, and I know it might not happen for a couple of years or whatever, but that Sugar Sean O'Malley dork, that guy he's a dork, man.
Man,
because all he does is like smoke weed and have weird hair. I don't think, first of all, he's entertaining. He's not entertaining me. I think he's just a big dork. And second of all, I don't think his fighting skills are that good. I know he's good on the feet, but I think I smashed that guy, and I hope to fight him sometime.
Got it. What were you saying, Gabe?
I was disappointed he didn't say the guy who beat him. Like, I've lost to 8 people. I fought 2 of them and got rematches in 1. There's 6 more. I still want to get that rematch from. I can't believe he didn't say the rematch.
Yeah, I'd like to
fight the guy, man.
At some point as well, but I mean, I'm not losing sleep over.
Fair enough.
Losses happen in this sport. Sometimes you got to move on, you know. But obviously, I'd like to get that one back. But I mean, I'm not gonna just go out of my way to just try to fight this guy, you know, if it's not a opportunity.
I actually give you credit. You're setting your heights higher.
Yeah. Well, no. Yeah, I know. This fight wouldn't happen for a while. That's just somebody in the UFC that I just look at him and I see him, you know, game and all that.
Door.
I don't see it. It's like, dude, this guy's like an idiot.
That's what sells tickets, though. Like, I mean, he has the multicolored hair. You know, he has that crazy.
Yeah.
Tattoos on his face. I mean, he smokes a lot of weed. I mean, that's what the kid's like, you know? Like, you know, who are we to argue about that, you know? But like,
it's obviously successful, but it's like, you don't want to sell your soul to the devil. It's like, at some point, it gets a little fake, and it's like, dude, like, chill out a little bit. Like, I get you're trying to, like, make money and sell yourself, but it's like, man, chill out a little bit.
So, Justin Simms asked a very important question for you. This is going to be the biggest question of the night. Why is Justin Simms the best-looking staff member at Titan?
I disagree with that question. So,
I love Justin Simms, man. And what was it like? I have to know, because I have the utmost respect for anybody presenting MMA shows, especially during a time of a pandemic. Like, what was it like to, you know, get into the building, go to weigh-ins, like, go to the fight? Like, what kind of hell did you have to endure, like, all you guys with Titan to get that show to go on and for you to get into the cage? Like, what the hell went on?
Definitely different, and Titan took all precautions necessary. You know, so I had to have a test. I think it was like 2 days before the fight, just to make sure I didn't have corona or whatever. They checked our temperatures once we got to the fight. They checked our temperatures 2 days before the fight. They were really strict with the testing. And then I think they like wash down the canvas after each fight. But it was weird, you know, because you got to walk inside the building with a fucking mask on, which is dumb as fuck.
Oh my God.
You got to do what you got to do. It was definitely a weird experience, but you know what? It's worth it. Because I know all these other promotions aren't putting on shows. So if I'm going to put on a show, then whatever I got to do to fight.
So I have a question for both Gabe and Danny. Like, do you think this is going to be the long-term world that we're living in where we have to, like, put on, like, a fire festival and go on Fighter Island in order to put on fights without, like, everyone wearing masks and taking tests and putting doing swabs? Like, is this literally going to be long-term what we have to live with?
I would hope not, because that's barely even living. Then why do it at all, you know? If you're going to just be sheltered your whole fucking life, then what's the even point of living if you're not going to be able to have fun or do anything? Even if it is as serious as they say, which I don't think it is, but even if it is, that what's the point? We're not even leaving our house. It's crazy to me, but it is what it is.
I personally don't think this is how it's going to be. I think, you know, with science, we're eventually going to get to a point where they have something to deal with it. And I actually agree that they've been showing that the deaths have been going down. So that's a fortunate sign. But I don't see this being the long-term hope. I mean, hopefully, who knows? I every day is more insanity. So I don't have a real 100% answer to that question.
But this is also scary for, like, the sport of MMA, like, without crowds, without, like, people actually going to the events, where that's a huge revenue stream for the UFC. Like, how are folks like Danny going to the UFC going to make money? I mean, John Jones wants to retire, like, Conor McGregor wants out, like, I heard some of your ATT members, the most notable ones, you know, I'm not going to mention anyone, Amanda Nunes wants to get out, like, you know, like, how are UFC fighters going to make money if we can't have crowds, if we can't, you know, go back to living as usual? You know, like, that's a scary, scary concept. Also,
how is anybody going to make money? Dude, you got businesses
exactly
down all the time. I mean, it's terrible. A lot of people are going through hardships, not just from the virus, but just from the effect that we're doing because of the virus. I mean, a lot of people are out a bunch of money just because of this. We can't make the reaction worse than the actual virus.
My friend just messaged me that coronavirus is the first thing that came from China that actually worked.
That's good.
Too soon. Unbelievable. No. So, okay. So now I'm going to get into hypotheticals. Okay. So from the beginning of time of mixed martial arts till now, like, dream opponent, anybody. It could be anybody from any weight class. Danny, who would you fight?
Ah, that's tough. It'd have to be Conor, just because he's the biggest. And if you beat him, then people would remember it and know it. So it's probably Conor. As much as that pains me to say, it's Conor.
Biggest influence, favorite MMA fighter. I said Sakuraba. Who's your biggest influence?
Clay Guida, just because he's from Chicago and he's my man. I got to give it to him.
If you weren't fighting, what would you do?
I'd probably be in jail. I don't know. That's a tough one. I really don't know.
When you retire, like Gabe, who is a proud father and husband, what do you plan on doing once you retire?
I don't know. A lot of people ask me that. I just have my eyes set on fighting right now. I know I should have a long-term plan, but
you should.
I want to look forward to anything. I don't want to, you know, just have things in the back of my mind about a different career. I just want to be all in and invested on fighting for now.
Funniest training story with one of your teammates at American Top Team. Funniest story.
I honestly don't have one. I'm a very intense. I take my training really, really seriously. When I'm in the gym, I don't crack smiles or I don't really do anything other than just get to it. So I don't really have anything too funny. I do like to have fun and clown around outside of the gym, but when I'm in the gym, I'm a very serious and intense guy.
Do you ever get work with Mo the Wall?
Yeah, King Mo.
How can you not have a good time with Mo? Like I've known Mo for years. That motherfucker.
Dude, we're like opposites.
I'll never know.
We are opposites because he is always laughing and always trying to have fun, always making things a game. And I'm kind of like, dude, shut the fuck up. Like, let's go. So it's like it's kind of funny, a clash of heads, but how it's like different with us, somehow it works. It's kind of crazy.
And that, you know, that Mo's like, I picked up Mo from training. I was getting ready for the Olympic trials. The first time I met him, and I picked him up. I had no idea who he was. Funniest motherfucker of all time.
Dude, you know, he's
love that dude.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Yeah, he's a punk bitch, but I love him.
Absolutely.
All right. I'm sorry. So, go back. I apologize.
So, one more question for you. King Mo had one of the best entrances of all time when he fought for Dream. Came out with all those girls and the crown. Will you do that, Danny? I know you're a bad motherfucker, but would you consider it?
Yeah, I would consider it because it's awesome and it's a legendary entrance. So anything that gets the people talking, I'm willing to do.
Who is your least favorite MMA fighter right now in the game?
Sean O'Malley, 100%. The guy, I can't look at him and just not want to punch him in the face. It's crazy.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Gabe, any final thoughts for our guest, the new champ, the reigning king of the throne?
Well, first off, congratulations. I'm going to be 100% honest with you. I don't watch a lot of MMA anymore. I follow a little bit, but for the most part, I look you up. You're in an exceptional team with a bunch of guys that I know very well. I hope that you know your career is a successful one. I will say, think about what you're going to do after fighting. Like, genuinely, like I'm fortunate. I have a school, and I was able to go progress into that. But I'll tell you, when my career was over, I was like, what a man.
Yeah.
So, if you got something on the secondary, have it set. Like, it just, even if it's a little something.
Right.
Saying.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right, man. Good skill.
So, Danny, obviously we're getting around that time, and obviously we're going to bring in Smiling Sam, and it's an honor to talk to you, especially after your huge victory. I mean, you know, coming from that to coming on the show, it's a huge honor, a huge treat for us. If you want to give any shout-outs, anything you want to talk about, you know, the floor is yours.
No, just shout out to me for having a fucking savage performance and be even better.
Dude, that performance is so fucking savage, man. I have no, like, dude, you are a mean motherfucker. Like, you in the UFC, you're going to give bantamweights proms. Do you realize this? You understand that, right? Yeah.
I hope so.
Dude, I saw your wrestling. It gives me Vietnam flashbacks. I have no idea, man. I have no idea how anybody steps in the cage with you. Just saying.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate it. And thanks for having me on, guys, too. It's been a ton of fun.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot.
Boys and girls, that was Mr. Danny, the champion. Gabe, what do you think?
Great. I nice kid. And it seems like he likes Sean O'Malley a lot. I think they'll probably get a condo together after fighting career's over, I could tell. But I have to look at his career now. I have to actually spend a little time and seeing. I mean, I saw that he's 8-1, one loss, but seems like he has a lot of he's with a great team, so he's got a lot of upside.
Yeah, and obviously, like we talked about, how MMA and how it's shifted from the times of old to now, where trash talking sells tickets, all that fun stuff isn't. Because bantamweight notoriously does not make money for the UFC. I mean, it doesn't. Don't we need guys like Danny to like kind of give a shot in the arm to the UFC, to the bantamweight division, to like kind of bring it up a little bit? Like guys like Danny.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think. Personalities are becoming a necessity because of the entertainment factor of it. I just feel like if you have more guys that are just rolling through people, I mean, those are the guys that for me, like a perfect example is an Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva for me is like, he sits on a pedestal because he would just run through dudes. And he, like, and Anderson is the most like genuinely nice guy. And he was respectful. I mean, he had his moments and everything, but like, I don't know. I think the showman side of it, like, yeah, but like a guy like Kale Sonnen, who had another guy who's actually a really nice individual. I trained with many, many times. Very, very nice guy. but he puts on that persona, and because of that, he's made a lot of money, and now he's got the podcast, he's doing everything. So, I mean, I believe in like the old way, but the new way, if you're trying to make money, you're trying to generate revenue, that's how it's done. So, you know.
And you come from a background, like you train with Team Quest, correct?
Yeah, I was with Quest, and let's see, where else have I been? I went Shootbox for a little bit. I mean, I've been around. I've trained with who's who. You know, I started my career, and I started doing jiu-jitsu in 98. My first fight was in 2002. I've traveled all over the world, trained with a bunch of different people. You know, I've been there, done that a little bit at least.
And I think coming out of that system of like Team Quest, because you train with the likes of like what, Dan Henderson, Chael Sonnen, Randy Couture, all respectful guys who are just fucking killers. So like obviously, you know, you come from like the old school where, you know, you don't have to talk shit, you can still sell tickets and still whoop that ass. So like obviously, you know, like do you see like a paradigm shift where like you don't watch UFC nowadays because it's not like the days of old? Like is that, you know, pretty much?
I keep up on it in the respect because I own a school and all my people want to talk about it. And I have some fighters that are aspiring that I work with. But it's like I'm just not as much of a fan anymore. I mean, like I obviously respect the skill sets that are available, and that the showmanship side of it is a part of it. But I'll be honest, like a guy like Conor McGregor just irritates the shit out of me. Like and it goes against everything that you know, that I held. Like you were talking about a guy like Sakuraba. How can you not like that guy? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know. It's a different world, but I also understand it. If that makes sense.
Right. And the only thing that came close to, like, the Conor McGregors of the world was Tito Ortiz. But we saw Tito Ortiz as a villain.
No. Oh, God. Really? Tito, are you kidding me? Dude, Tito, he cannot put three words together. He's so bad. Like I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry at all. Like whenever Tito opened his mouth, it was pathetic. I think one of my favorites ever was when him and Chuck were gonna fight the second time, and Chuck's like, "I'm gonna knock you out," and Tito goes, "You might, but I'll be here." And you're like, "Oh, ow, I cringe over here. Oh, ow."
But we always saw energy. Yeah, but we always saw the bad guys get there was in the end. Like, you remember back in, like, 2003 when Tito Ortiz, like, it's November 2002. Let me just put you guys, bulk and mind strip you guys back to, like, November 2002 before you were probably even watching because, like, maybe 10 people were watching in the United States.
So I started doing jiu-jitsu in 98. My first UFC I ever watched was UFC 4 live.
Yeah.
So yeah, but okay, taking back to 2002, we're right back there. We don't have cell phones. I can't take pictures. There's no Twitter. We're there. We're in there. Tell me all about it.
Not you, Gabe. I would never, trust me. There's nothing I can tell you that you don't already know already.
I don't think at all. I want to just bring you back to what your point was. Like, no more. Like, please. No, like, please. Yeah.
So Tito Ortiz, Huntington Beach bad boy, just beats Ken Shamrock. And then like the big fight that was built up all summer, like even on Fox, that was like one of the first nationally televised fights where Chuck Liddell beat Vitor Belfort. Tito Ortiz hops over the cage and like obviously they're building up that fight. That fight's been building up for a while up to that point. And then November 2002, Tito Ortiz, the biggest villain who talked the most shit possible, was like, well, you know what? Chuck Liddell is my friend and everything like that. Boom, the villain. What did you say?
I said, you mean tucking? Yeah, because he knows his buddy would beat his ass. I know. Yeah, okay. Anyways, feel free.
Yeah. And then Tito Ortiz reveals himself, reveals the fact that villain, it was all an insecurity. Like that one guy, his one, you know, kryptonite was Chuck Liddell. You know, they trained together. Chuck Liddell beat that ass. And then, you know, Chuck Liddell is like, okay, fuck it. You know, I'll fight Randy Couture. Randy Couture beat him. But, you know, Chuck Liddell, I think, highly underestimated him because, you know, Randy Couture, his last two fights were a loss to Kevin Burdett. Rico Rodriguez. And then another guy. One tested positive for steroids.
Burnett.
Barnett. Yeah. So obviously everyone's underestimating him. So obviously they throw Ray Couture, like, yeah, drop down the light heavyweight and go fight Chuck Liddell. Bam! Big mistake, motherfucker. Like, Ray Couture, wax that ass. And then Chuck Liddell's like, okay, Tito Ortiz is not gonna fight. We're gonna take a break from the summer, and now I'll go to Pride. And he fought for Total Elimination 2003 and fought in the Grand Prix tournament. Yeah, well, Alistair Overeem waxed that ass and then got up to Quentin Rampage Jackson, which, you know, Styles make fights, and Quentin Rampage Jackson was just a mean, mean guy, bad mofo back in the day. But getting to my point, and then finally we see the fight with Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz, and that one villain, the one guy that talked the most shit ever, got his up and comings. And, you know, even the casual MMA fight, like, viewers and even the audience that was there saw, okay, if you talk a lot of shit in a respectful sport, you're going to get beat up and you're going to love watching it. Like, you know, I don't think Conor McGregor has necessarily got that up and comings yet. I don't, like, even Khabib didn't set the point home. Like, do you think
he is? And Khabib, I think absolutely he did. I think, I think one of the best things was Khabib chasing him going, talk now. And he's like, oh, it's all business. It's all business. I'm trying to be a spectacle. And Habib's like, I'm not a spectacle. I'm here to beat your ass. No, he absolutely got his comeuppance.
Right, but what's it going to take for the audience to evolve where it was back in the day where we still watched respectful fighters, looked up to them, like idolized guys like Ray Couture, Sakharov, and everything like that? What is going to be the turning point where MMA turns that corner and people don't watch for trash talking or anything like that, and they watch for the beauty that is the sport? You know what I'm saying? You know,
I think there's this massive change up. And I mean, if you get a guy that goes on a tear, you know, like a GSP is a perfect example. This guy goes on a tear and you can't stop him and everything he's doing, then there's going to be a little paradigm change, but people are still going to want the guy who talks. I mean, look, I Chael Sonnen, in my opinion, is the best at talking. Like, he's brilliant. And when he cuts a promo, it's enjoyable. I think Conor's good at it too, but like Chael, like he personifies the bad guy. He personifies the wrestling heel. And that will always be something that's appreciated in the scope of entertainment.
Right, but we also appreciate Chael Sonnen because we knew he was in character. We knew that he would, like, deep down, he's a great guy. Like, all interviews, he's a fucking awesome guy. And like every interview, he has such an MMA mind. Like, it's beyond. Like, do you listen to his podcast? Like, I've probably like
every once in a while. I've never listened to a full podcast. I've listened to him if he talks about something I have an interest in. I've listened to him talk about it.
He's a fucking genius. I mean, like, the guy has an MMA IQ like no other. Like, but I like Chael Sonnen more than I like Conor McGregor. I think Conor McGregor was a tool. You know, I think that you can be talented and let your talent speak for itself. You know, like, and that's just like the MMA I loved watching. And Conor McGregor, I would be a big fan of him if he didn't talk so much shit. You know, like, what were we saying? I'm so sorry.
My issue with Conor, the talking means nothing. It's about the person you've become. And he's essentially a weaker, shittier Floyd Mayweather. Like, it's just like seriously, like with like, and it's just he's not respectful to people. He's like he's always constantly looking for attention, and it's just like, look, man, we get it. You like the spotlight, and that's good. But you know, hitting old men in bars because they won't drink your stupid crappy whiskey. Fuck you. I genuinely like things like that, like, you know, doing massive amounts of coke and you know, like, I just look, every man can do what he wants to do, and I get it, you're a big star, but you can still give yourself like some proper human dignity. That's my feeling.
Right. And do you see anybody, like, obviously you don't watch the sport that much, but like, do you see anybody up and coming? Like, obviously you hear things through the grapevine. Obviously you're still involved in the sport, even though you're not necessarily watching it all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of talent. I mean, there's always exceptional talent, and you know, that Shane O'Malley kid's pretty good.
I'm kidding.
I've seen him fight twice. I don't know anything about him. It's just the name got brought up. Nunez is a beast. Like, she's a beast. I can't think of anyone that right now that I'm like, oh wow, this person is really like they're saying, like Adesanya like they're saying he's the new Anderson. No. I mean, Anderson in his prime made it look like a video game. Like, I just genuinely, it's just a different animal. I don't know. I always feel like there's going to be this next talent because how MMA has evolved. Like, I can't believe the time frame is like you did one thing and then you learned how to do a couple other things, right? Now you have kids that are like, they've been wrestling their whole lives. They've done jiu-jitsu tournaments their whole lives. They're golden glove boxers. They've already done pro kickboxing. They have all the elements. And I think that like the talent pool is really, really high.
Now we have natural athletes. I mean, you have like people like you and I who, like, I grew up like a wrestler and like doing smoker fights. All I had to do was just do a takedown, just lay on him for three rounds. I'm perfect. Three, it's 9 minutes. Like, he's just 9 minutes of my life. All I have to do is just blanket you like Ricardo. All I have to do is just lay on you like Ricardo Arona, do the Ricardo Arona blanket, and that's it. Like, call it a day. Like, he's a smoker fights ever. But now we're in this stage where everyone's a natural athlete. These kids are going like Tiger Shulman's MMA and going to these great gyms and learning the entire spectrum of what makes a complete mixed martial artist. And like, I love where the sport's heading, but like, you know, it's so weird seeing MMA under the confines of publicly traded companies like WMG, UFC, Bellator is owned by Valcom. Now it's in the control of, you know, corporate, big money corporate. Like, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah. It's crazy. So like I said, the time frame I came from when I started doing jiu-jitsu, UFC was every 3 months, and I think maybe 1,500 people would watch it. I remember like watching Frank Shamrock fight Tito Ortiz in a sports bar, and dude, the fight was amazing, like sick fight. But dude, there was 1,500 people in attendance. Like nobody knew about that fight. Nobody knew about fighting. It was unbelievable. And to see where it's at now, ridiculous.
And my dad, God rest his soul, we had to go to his camper. He had DirecTV, and like we had to wait up until like 1 a.m. to get like the dump of like a Pride event. Like, I remember the first Pride event we ordered was Pride Championship Chaos, where Sakuraba fought Wanderlei Silva, and you trained with Shoot a Box. So like, Wanderlei Silva was a Shoot a Box, just saying. And then it was Heath Herring fighting Antonio, and like. Yeah. Such like people don't know the good old days and how exciting MMA was and like how the lengths we had to go, like tape trading. There was no YouTube. We had tape trade. We had to like stamp legal boxes in order to order those UFC events. Like, people won't know the sheer joy and the workarounds we had to go through to watch like the old days of like UFC and Pride. Like, now we got to that point where like now MMA is just like oversaturated. MMA is everywhere now.
It's amazing. I think it's for me, I think the Pride was as big as you could get. You know what I mean? Like, especially I've been to Japan 5 times, and the opportunity to see how Pride over there was basically how the UFC is now here. It's great. It's amazing to think that it's grown to this point, but. I feel like an old man saying like, oh, these kids just don't know.
So I'll say it for you. These kids just don't know.
They don't, but yeah.
So train with Shootbox, and like, obviously you've been engulfed with the whole MMA lifestyle for such a long time and longer. I was a fan by the time you were training. I mean, since 98, like I was in what? Fifth grade, fourth grade when it like, so, did you want to fight in Pride? Did you want to fight in UFC? Like,
When I first fought for the first time, I just did it because I was afraid of fighting. Like, and like MMA to me seemed like the most extreme possibility to do it. And I did it just to try it out. I mean, I got $200. It wasn't like there was no money. There was no television. I actually got an opportunity to fight in Pride. I was going to fight Gomi when he fought Marcos Aurelius. They offered me that fight, and my owner, my manager Ed Soares was like, no, 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 let's not take this fight. And I'm like, okay, let's go do this. Like, I want to fight. This is when Gomi was the number one guy in the world. I'm like, dude, I don't care. Let's go. And Ed was like, oh, it's not good for your career for the time being. And then they went with Marcus Aurelius, and Marcus Aurelius, I think, armbarred him or choked him or something like that. Not saying that would have been me, but it probably would have been me.
Right. He had a war with fucking shooter box guys. Like, that was, like, at the height. Like, they have a shooter box gym over in Newark, New Jersey, with one of the former members of shooter box and one of the guys I actually fought, Takanori Gomi. Like, Takanori Gomi was a fucking buzzsaw, like, back in the day. Like,
You know, what's funny is, like, there's so many names that, like I bring up Jens Pulver. When I trained with BJ, BJ was – so he was a purple belt when I was a white belt. He was at the gym the very first day I started training jiu-jitsu. So I've known him since my beginning of jiu-jitsu career. And I saw him go from purple to brown to black and being a world champion. I would go down to San Jose to train with him at AKA. People don't know that Jens Pulver at one point was the best fighter in the world, like, yeah, by a lot. Yeah. And like, when I bring it up, like, either one, they don't know who Jens is, or two, they're like, oh yeah, that old washed up guy. You're like, dude, like, you don't know the history. Like, at one point, he was the best guy in the world. Like,
he was the shit. He was the shit.
When he, okay, so at the time frame, BJ was the first American black belt world champion in jiu-jitsu. And just a phenom, Like, dude, we'd go down there, and he was just a beast. He got his first fight in the UFC, and then just smashed the guy. And when he was gonna fight Pulver for the title, we're like, dude, Pulver's done. He has no idea what he's getting himself into. When he
BJ,
holy shit! We're like, dude, I have nothing but respect for that guy. 1,000,000% respect. Like, it's just like unbelievable, really. And I Jens doesn't get half the respect he deserves. Because of that,
beat him for 5 rounds and the biggest fucking smile I've ever seen on any man's like, Sure Dog all rid him off. Like, everyone said, oh, BJ Penn's gonna fucking tear right through him. No,
I was in the training camp. I was like, no way. Like, it is an impossibility that BJ doesn't. I was like, we'll finish him in 2 rounds. Like, but you know what? Jens is as gangster as they come, and like, again, if you want to know the history, like, yeah, like, and then Jens and then Gomi. Gomi's another one. Like, he has guys that have beat him in the UFC. You're like, dude, you have no idea. That guy is a legend, a fucking legend.
Oh, yeah. And I met BJ Penn in New York for an event for a UFC gym, and I got to sit down with him and actually talk to him with his wars with Carlo Uno, which were some of my favorite fights and everything. Like, BJ Penn and nobody know. Everybody who's watching this, you have to go on YouTube and watch some of the old days where, like, BJ Penn fought Carlo Uno and, like, watch Jens Pulver. Like, those guys were fucking radical. And, like, Jens Pulver, his fight with Takanori Gomi was one of my favorite fights. Like, they put clinic, just technically sound striking and just, like, oh my God, like, mind-blowing. Like, whew, unbelievable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We could talk MMA history all night, and I think the other part is that unless you were there living it at the time, I watched it. Like, okay, here's a perfect example: is I watch Bloodsport every once in a while. When I was a kid, Bloodsport was the baddest movie on the planet. I really believe that Frank Dukes had gone to Hong Kong and had done this kumite. When I was a kid, I really believed that. I watch it now, and I'm like, oh God, this is garbage. This does not hold up at all. Like, there's the nostalgia part of it. I'm curious if people now are like, well, yeah, these fights, I don't understand what people are talking about them. But I mean, for me, the nostalgia of it is, I mean, it was mind-blowing for the time frame.
It's like that movie, Last Dragon, where, like, did you ever fight anybody that had the glow, Gabe?
Never, not yet, thankfully. I'm really fortunate throughout my whole career and my whole life, I have not fought anybody with the glow. Thank you. Are we talking right now? Yes. I've not found anybody with the glow.
Perfect. So, you know, obviously Sam, Smiling Sam, was not able to make it, and we wish him the best. And yeah, so, and you and I just shot the shit for like a good what? Like,
I was like, yeah, don't we still have Sam Alvey? I was like, it's
not sure what happened to him.
I miss Mylon Sam, but I got to, you know, get some MMA knowledge dropped on me. So, like, you know, all the power to you. I appreciate you.
You know what? If I can sub in and pass on a little bit of that, I'm happy with that too.
And you, do you run a gym? Like, you actually have students now?
Yeah. Cool. I own Kaiju MMA and Fitness in beautiful Tarzana, California. You know, we're running a very, very small COVID-19 affected gym. Not anyone's affected. No one's infected. Affected in the respect that we're closed down. We were usually open 7 days a week. We're only open 4 days a week. We have classes, and you have to call in advance. You have to get your temperature taken. You have to disinfect your hands. And so, like I said, affected. No one has been infected. So. But I'm very, very gracious that I had the opportunity to pass on knowledge. I've been doing jiu-jitsu since 98. And I've done kickboxing all over the world. Anthony Hardog was my previous coach before I ended up retiring. And then I was at Fairtex for years. I've trained with all the high level wrestlers. I was at Quest. There were so many guys that came in through that. I've been very, very fortunate and gracious that I've had the opportunities that I've had. And now I am also thankful that I can pass that knowledge on, and I have people that actually believe in me enough to allow their kids and them to come in and for me to pass on that knowledge. So I'm grateful and fortunate. Going back to talking to I'm sorry, I'm blanking on his name. The last guy we were just talking to, is it
Danny?
I definitely feel that anyone that is planning to do this, regardless of if your intention is being a world, a massive star, you should always have a secondary option. It's just no matter what that the ride, when it comes to an end, you're just kind of be like, okay, what do I do now? And I know a lot of fighters that don't even have the ability to teach, which is unfortunate. But I mean, a fighter mentality is a different mentality than a teaching mentality.
So I'm so heavily reliant. Like, I'm excited for the next generation. Like, I can't wait for the hybrid athletes that come out of the woodwork, and we're gonna see a next level of MMA. But like, you're also training the next generation of fighters. Like, what advice do you give to like young kids who want to fight and say, hey, Gabe, I really want to fight? What's the one thing that you teach? What's the one fundamental that you took from your journey and you're gonna pass it on to younger kids?
You have to be 100% committed to it. You can't be so stuck on having a persona, having people like I now it's different because everyone's like, I need Twitter followers. I need Instagram followers. Which is a different world that I'm used to. And I'm just like, look, just train your ass off, get as prepared as you possibly can, always be in shape and go in and perform. Like, that's really what it comes down to. Fighting is about performing, going in there and going and doing your best. If you're worried about how many followers you have, you know, what t-shirt you have ready and prepared, what your banner looks like, you're missing the point of the whole journey.
So, and we have a question, and shout out to our friend that just asked that question. Like, what was your toughest fight in your career?
You know what? I like fighting, all of them are tough. All of them are, win or lose. They're all very, very tough. I think my last fight in the UFC against Paul Taylor was probably the toughest, just because my girlfriend at the time was pregnant with who's my daughter now.
Congratulations!
She's nine. There's nothing to crush me about. I'm kidding. No. Please congratulate me.
Sorry.
But there was so much baggage and so much concern about, if I lose this fight, I know I'm going to get cut. I know this is going to happen. And it wasn't so much that Paul Taylor was a tough fight, but I put so much on myself that I had to win. And that was probably the toughest in my career. But I was a tough, tough dude. I mean, Joe was on the tough, Melvin Gilliard at that time frame was tough. I know, Melvin's been like a 50 fight lose streak, but at the time when I fought him, he was tough. Savant Young is tough. Von der Braga 15-0 when I fought him. fought a lot of tough dudes. I mean, listen, anyone that steps in that cage is going to be tough. Everyone that makes the decision to fight another grown man is a tough dude that thinks he's going to win. And win or lose, like that, I respect every opponent that I've had.
Gotcha. Is there anybody that you wish you fought, like, throughout your career? Like, is there anybody that you missed or somebody
I wish I would have fought Gomi again. I wish I would have taken the Gomi fight just to see. I mean, who knows? I would have liked to rematch with Joe Lauzon. I like Joe. I talked to him maybe 8 months ago. You know, I respect him immensely, but that's a fight that I really feel I could have won. I'm sure Joe feels that, you know, he beat me again, but, you know, whatever. I have 6 losses that I haven't had a rematch. Those are the ones that I still feel like, those are fights I would want again.
Absolutely. And we're about to head to the hour mark. Matt, do you have any last words? Anything you want to say?
No, I do want to thank our sponsor, T-Max Phone. That's tmaxphone.com. They help with people's gym phones. It's internet-based, and if you're needing a phone, get a hold of them, tmaxphone.com.
Right. I just want to thank Gabe for coming on as a guest host, and as an 11-year veteran, as a champion, like, as a co-host, I don't even deserve to share the same mic with you. I mean, you're one of the veterans, and that's just my personal opinion. So, like, as soon as Matt said he's bringing on Gabe, I'm like, holy shit, like, you know, this is not where I park my car. So, like, Gabe, any last words? Like, I absolutely appreciate you coming on and sharing the mic with me.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, I don't think I deserve all of that, but I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. You know, I still love MMA, and I mean, it was a massive part of my life, and it still is because I still teach and whatnot. But, you know, opportunity to talk is always fun, and I thank you for having me.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot, Gabe.
My pleasure, guys.
Alrighty, boys and girls, children of all ages, Matt, great first show. And Justin, I hope you're feeling better. And Matt, what do you think?
I thought it went pretty well. I'm hoping everybody comes back next week. We'll be on again Thursday, 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. So thank you, Absolutely. Everybody, for watching.
And thank you very much for Fight Mixer. Thank you, everybody that watched. Thank you, everybody that participated and asked questions. We'll be back next week, next Thursday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern with another great guest. And until then, we'll have a good 4th of July weekend, and we'll see you then.
Perfect. 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 Perfect.